Natasha, thank you very much indeed. Good evening, everyone, from Washington on what is also clearly a very big night in the UK. The Prime Minister's announcement of a new month-long lockdown for England. Has he bowed to the inevitable? We're clearing the decks here to bring you the latest. Also,
the most important election we've ever had.
It's time to stand up. Take back our democracy.
Tonight, the candidates are making their closing arguments. I want to hear yours. Who are you backing for the presidency? Donald Trump or Joe Biden? Call me now, 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Tweet at LBC. It's a big night, and on both sides of the Atlantic, we've got you covered.
On your radio, on Global Player, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock. The Prime Minister has tonight announced a new four-week lockdown for England. It's due to start on Thursday and last until December the 2nd. It means pubs, restaurants, non-essential shops, gyms and hairdressers will be closed for 4 weeks. But schools, colleges, universities, construction sites, factories and courts will remain open. Boris Johnson also outlined the other restrictions.
You must stay at home. You may only leave home for specific reasons, including for education, for work, let's say if you cannot work from home, for exercise and recreation outdoors with your household or on your own, with one person from another household, for medical reasons, appointments, and to escape injury or harm.
Well, even though those measures are similar to the restrictions that were in force in March, the Prime Minister insisted it will feel different.
These measures, above all, will be time limited. Starting Thursday, the 5th of November, they'll end on Wednesday, the 2nd of December, when we'll seek to ease restrictions going back into the tiered system.
Well, Mr. Johnson warned without action, deaths in the second wave could outstrip the first wave. Government data shows more than 1 million laboratory confirmed cases of coronavirus have been recorded in the UK since the start of the outbreak, including nearly 22,000 today. A further 326 people have died within 28 days of testing positive for COVID-19. Well, Mr. Johnson has been accused of not taking action soon enough, though. Speaking this evening, Labour leader Keir Starmer.
These measures are necessary and we've been calling for them. We'll listen carefully to what the Prime Minister has to say, but these are the measures we called for 3 weeks ago. The scientific advisers said were necessary back in September. So the government has delayed and dithered. Just as in the first phase, where they were too slow, they've repeated the same mistake.
However, England's chief medical officer, Professor Chris Whitty, disagrees with Keir.
There is basically no perfect time and there are no good solutions. All the solutions are bad. And what we're trying to do is have the fewest, you know, the least bad set of solutions.
Well, these people have told LBC their views on the new lockdown.
Full lockdown, I don't think that will make a difference from the local lockdowns because the local lockdowns haven't been enforced properly anyway.
I think it's ridiculous, to be fair, mainly because we've already had lockdowns and the results and the outcomes, it's not been the best, has it?
Children be at school, universities, they're all going to be mixing. Once they come back to the families, they'll be affected. So it's not a proper lockdown like we had in March.
Well, Parliament is to get a vote on the proposals. Conservative MP Sir John Redwood, who's previously expressed doubt about a lockdown, says it is important that the matter is debated.
We're not planning rebellions or anything. We desperately want this government to do well, and this is a national crisis. And I trust MPs of all political persuasions will approach it in that spirit and make their best judgment based on the evidence.
And it has been announced that elite sport, including Premier League football, will still be allowed to take place during the lockdown. However, amateur sports will be put on hold. LBC weather, showers and gales across Scotland eventually easing. Clear for many areas for a while, followed by further rain and strong to gale force winds spreading east to all parts of the UK by morning, a low of 6 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Zora Suleiman.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Simon Marks.
Well, good evening from Washington. I am Simon Marks. Let me say right at the start of the programme that if you're looking for legal advice, you've come to the wrong place tonight. Daniel Barnett is taking the week off, but he will be back next Saturday at 9, so save your questions up until then. Tonight seemed like a good time to devote an hour to the American election, given that Election Day is officially almost upon us, and we will get to that in a bit. But obviously there have also been, as we were hearing from Zora, in the news, some very big developments tonight in London, and we are going to kick off with those. The latest on the lockdown announced for England by the Prime Minister from Thursday until the beginning of December. Boris Johnson is telling you to stay home unless you've got some very specific reasons for leaving. LBC's Westminster correspondent Ben Kentish, who is with me here in Washington covering the US election but keeping fully across developments in London, joins me now. And Ben, we had an idea this was coming last night, didn't we? But it's very dramatic to hear it.
The most dramatic announcement, Simon, from Boris Johnson since March, a repetition of that phrase that he hoped, that all of us hoped, he would never have to utter, stay at home. And for weeks, the government was hoping and insisting that it didn't believe that would be necessary. It didn't believe a national lockdown was the way forward. The tiered approach, three tiers, localised measures was the plan. That was the intention. That was what they hoped would contain the number of cases. But the data that has been published and the data that ministers have been presented with in private makes very clear that those measures that were introduced just a few weeks ago are nowhere near enough to combat what is a rapidly rising pandemic in the UK. So as you said, in a pretty hastily announced press conference on a Saturday afternoon, Boris Johnson outlining what those tough measures are once again and telling the British people, as he did in March, you must stay at home.
From Thursday until the start of December, you must stay at home. You may only leave home for specific reasons, including for education, for work, let's say if you cannot work from home, for exercise and recreation outdoors with your household or on your own, with one person from another household, for medical reasons, appointments, and to escape injury or harm, to shop for food and essentials, and to provide care for vulnerable people or as a volunteer. I'm afraid non-essential shops, leisure and entertainment venues will all be closed, though click and collect services can continue and essential shops will remain open, so there's no need to stock up. Pubs, bars, restaurants must close except for takeaway and delivery services. Workplaces should stay open where people can't work from home, for example, in the construction and manufacturing sectors. Single adult households can still form exclusive support bubbles with one other household, and children will still be able to move between homes if their parents are separated. If you're clinically vulnerable or over the age of 60, you should be especially careful to follow the rules and minimise your contacts with others. I know how tough shielding was, and we will not ask people to shield again in the same way, but we are asking those who are clinically extremely vulnerable to minimise their contact with others and not to go to work if they are unable to work from home. I'm under no illusions about how difficult this will be for businesses which have already had to endure such hardship this year, and I'm truly, truly sorry for that. And that's why we are going to extend the furlough system through November. The furlough scheme was a success in the spring. It supported people and businesses in a critical time. We will not end it. We will extend furlough until December. There will be some differences compared to March. These measures, above all, will be time limited. Starting Thursday, the 5th of November, they'll end on Wednesday, the 2nd of December, when we'll seek to ease restrictions, going back into the tiered system on a local and a regional basis, according to the latest data and trends. Christmas is going to be different this year, perhaps very different, but it's my sincere hope and belief that by taking tough action now, we can allow families across the country to be together. Our priority remains keeping people in education, so childcare, early years settings, schools, colleges, and universities will all remain open. Our senior clinicians still advise that school is the best place for children to be.
Simon, it's hard to overstate the risk that this poses to Boris Johnson and his government. Tory MPs are furious, one saying to him in the last few minutes, the handling of this is a complete shambles. They know that this move today leaves the government very open to the accusation that it was again too slow, that it should have moved when Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland did, should have listened to the scientists who were saying we need action now. Keir Starmer, Labour leader, of course, already in the last few minutes saying Labour was calling for a national lockdown weeks ago. The Prime Minister was once again too late. Now, number 10 say that they were right to focus on the regional approach first because of the damage that this will do. But it's not Conservative MPs who will be their primary concern, Simon. It is the public. And we wait to see what their reaction to this second full lockdown is. And I think it was that that led Boris Johnson at the end of his speech today to try to give British people a sense of hope and optimism. While he said the next few months would be undeniably difficult, there is light at the end of the tunnel.
I am optimistic that this will feel very different and better by the spring. It's not just that we have ever better medicines and therapies and the realistic hope of a vaccine in the first quarter of next year. We now have the immediate prospect of using many millions of cheap, reliable and above all rapid turnaround tests. Tests that you can use yourself to tell you whether or not you're infectious and get the result within 10 to 15 minutes. And we know from trials across the country in schools and hospitals that we can use these tests not just to locate infectious people, but to drive down the disease. And so over the next few days, weeks, we plan a steady but massive expansion in the deployment of these quick turnaround tests, applying them in an ever-growing number of situations, from helping women to have their partners with them in labour wards when they're giving birth, to testing whole towns and even whole cities. The army has been brought in to work on the logistics, and the programme will begin in a matter of days. Working with local communities, local government, public health directors, organisations of all kinds, to help people discover whether or not they're infectious and then immediately to get them to help them to self-isolate and stop the spread of the disease. And I can tell you tonight that the scientists may be pretty uniformly gloomy about the immediate options that we face, but they are unanimously optimistic about the medium and the long-term future. We will get through this, but we must act now to contain this autumn surge. We're not going back to the full-scale lockdown of March and April. The measures that I've outlined are less prohibitive and less restrictive, but I'm afraid from Thursday, the basic message is the same. Stay at home, protect the NHS, and save lives.
The Prime Minister speaking to the nation a short while ago in London and announcing plans that begin next Thursday for another lockdown in England. We heard from our Westminster correspondent Ben Kentish, and we'll be hearing from Ben again after the news headlines at 9:30. I'm Simon Marks, live in Washington, and we're going to move on now to talk about the US election. And I want to hear from you. Which candidate are you backing, Donald Trump or Joe Biden? You can call me on 0345 6060 973. It's the cheapest transatlantic phone call you'll ever make. You can text me at 84850 and you can tweet at LBC. The candidates, of course, have been on the campaign trail today making their closing arguments. With more than 90 million votes cast, there cannot be that many undecided voters out there still to reach, but they are giving it a go nonetheless. And Joe Biden has been keeping his focus very much on the impacts of COVID-19 on this side of the Atlantic and the impacts of the pandemic on the American economy. He spoke in Flint, Michigan earlier today.
Imagine where we'd be if we had a president who wore a mask instead of mocking it. I can tell you this,
We wouldn't have 9 million confirmed cases of COVID in this nation, over 230,000 deaths. All the way back in January, he knew how dangerous this pandemic was. And he hid it from the American people.
Donald Trump has been speaking in Reading, Pennsylvania. He is furious with the U.S. Supreme Court, which decided yesterday that in some states, postal votes must be counted even if they arrive 9 days after Election Day. They've got to be postmarked on or before Election Day. But in North Carolina and a couple of other states, if they arrive days after the election, the U.S. Supreme Court says they've still got to be counted.
That is a terrible, political, horrible decision that they made. We're going to be waiting. November 3rd is going to come and go, and we're not going to know. And you're going to have bedlam in our country, and you're going to have this period of 9 days or 7 days or whatever it is. This is a horrible thing that the United States Supreme Court has done to our country.
And that's coming from the man who appointed 3 of the 9 Supreme Court justices, predicting bedlam in this country. No wonder they're boarding up all the shops, offices and businesses in the center of Washington, D.C. So after the break, I want to hear from you. Who are you backing? Do you think Donald Trump deserves 4 more years? Or is it time for him to be turfed out of the White House and replaced by Joe Biden? 0345 6060973 is the number to reach me. You can text me at 84850, tweet at LBC. You're listening to Simon Marks, live from Washington on LBC. It's 9:16.
LBC. Simon Marks on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let your fingers do the walking, as they used to say. It's nearly 20 past 5 here in Washington, D.C., 20 past 5 in the afternoon. It's 20 past 9 nearly in the UK. And we're going to get to your calls, texts and tweets on the U.S. election. It is, as you surely know, winding up. And what a long ride it's been. I want to know who you are supporting and why. And we're going to kick off with our first caller tonight. It's Alex calling in from Bury St. Edmunds. Alex, who is your horse in this particular race?
Hi, Simon. My horse is changed, but it's Biden this time, because I originally voted... I was on the side of Trump last time because I wanted something different, and he was, whichever way you look at it, incredibly entertaining and such a refreshing change. And I thought, well, let's give him a chance. But he is pandering to every single corporation and group of people who want to plunder the environment, really, and his pursuit of business to the extent of everything else is just going to... It's just no example. He has to go this time. But he will, from my point of view, the entertainment value will be taken down several notches when he's gone.
There is no question, Alex, that we're not going to have material this good for very much longer if he does indeed leave the White House. I'm interested that you seized on the environment there, because, of course, President Trump is accused of relaxing environmental protections. But how confident are you that Joe Biden's going to turn that around and undo some of the things that Donald Trump has done?
Well, a lot of confidence, really. You do hear quite a lot about his scheme that billions are going in for this Green New Deal that he seems to have been persuaded to get behind.
Yeah, although he says he's not backing the Green New Deal. Donald Trump keeps trying to tie him to the Green New Deal, and he's been very, very careful about not embracing it particularly tightly.
Well, that may be so, but I think he will go down. If he gets in, I think he will be steered. And I think there's going to be a lot of steering with Biden myself once he gets in, to go down far more green routes than Trump will ever get near going down. I mean, Trump, for all his entertainment value, and I have to say, from my point of view, I love listening to the news. Any new Trump news, I'm there. You know, particularly with your reporting of it, I find it very exciting. But from a policy point of view, coming out of the Paris Climate Accords, you know, and that won't be the last of it. He is just hell bent on really kind of setting fire to everything for the pursuit of money.
Alex, I appreciate the call. Thanks very much indeed. Of course, Joe Biden has said that he will take the United States back into the Paris Climate Change Accords as soon as he is elected, if indeed he is elected. We've got texts and tweets coming in. Ali in North London says, I would vote for Biden if I were in the USA, saying, as Alex was saying there, Trump has blotted his copybook far too many times. I'm also sick of his rude and arrogant tweets. Alex in Northampton says Donald Trump is awful as a president, but equally, I cannot imagine Joe Biden being president either. And he makes the point that a few days ago, Joe Biden appeared to forget that the name of the president of the United States was Donald and not George in a an appearance in a virtual event that we reported at the time here on LBC. Let's get to our next caller who has dialed 0345 6060973, and it's Adam in Westminster. Adam, who are you backing?
Well, good evening, Simon. Thank you for having me on. Who am I backing? This is a one-horse race, and in my view, always has been, always will be, Donald Trump. For the simple reason, Simon, when you look at politics in America, as I've done over the last 15, 20 years, and I've saw people come and go, as you have as well, I look at people like Barack Obama, a classic example of someone who knows how to give fantastic sound bites to a nation, but delivered very little. And I talk particularly in point when Syria gassed their own people during the war that's going on there. Didn't Barack Obama stand up on the stage and said they've crossed the red line? And exactly what did he do about that at that point? Diddly squat. What did Donald Trump do recently? Didn't he send some bombs over there and drop them on an airport? At least this guy, if nothing else, forget his attitude, forget the fact that he rubs everybody up the wrong way. This is a guy who, in my view, and again, it's only my view, he's 75%, he does what he says, and he says what he does. He has taken an economy in the USA from 2016 to 2020, before this started, into an unparalleled booming example of how you can actually grow an economy. And had it not been for coronavirus, this guy would be a shoo-in quite simply in now as we're going into this election. He's also, in my view, got more backbone than Joe Biden ever will. Joe Biden is someone, in my view, that if he gets this job, every dictator around the world, and incidentally not excluding Korea, North Korea and China, will be bullying him like you've never seen. At least Donald Trump had the audacity, some might say, to go and meet this Kim Jong-un of North Korea and sit down and try to get a bit of a peace process going with one of the nastiest dictators in the world. And, you know, if it didn't work out, at least he can say that he tried. I can't think for one second if Joe Biden or any other Democratic president would do that, Simon. And okay, lastly, but not stomach.
Yeah, well, I was just saying, there's a lot in there, Adam. I mean, you say this is a one-horse race, but the polls very clearly indicate that that this is not a one-horse race. And I also want to challenge you about this idea that, you know, Donald Trump has done what he said he was going to do. He hasn't built a wall and made Mexico pay for it. He hasn't at all drained the swamp in Washington, D.C. If anything, he substituted a new swamp for the swamp that he said that he was going to drain. I mean, why are you so confident that he's going to win this election?
I think a lot of people are going to be surprised in a couple of days' time, Simon. I mean, this is a guy that's fighting against a Republican Congress with Nancy Pelosi basically showing no respect for the president whatsoever. I mean, this guy came into the office, Simon, from day one, and everybody, and I mean but every Democratic person, was on his case. Everybody. This guy has not even had a chance to sit down in the Oval Office, but there were people trying to get him impeached, people trying to get him removed from the office, and all these allegations coming left, right, and center. The Democrats could never, ever graciously admit that they lost that election. And I'll tell you one other thing, Simon, before I end this call. And we had a conversation a few days ago. You were on a panel with Bonnie Greer and a few other people, and I asked
the
question.
On cross-question.
I was the last caller on, and I asked, what would happen if Joe Biden won more electoral college votes, However, Donald Trump won more of the popular vote. And one of the guests on that panel, Bonnie Greer, had the audacity to say that without a doubt, it's the Electoral College votes. It's a very short memory, Simon, because 4 years ago, that same lady, when Donald Trump won more of the Electoral College votes and Hillary Clinton got more of the popular vote, she was screaming that Hillary Clinton should have won that election. People have got a short memory, but not Adam in Westminster. I know American politics very well.
All right, Adam. Well, thank you very much indeed for the call. We will see if you are right and this turns out to be a one-horse race. I have some doubts about that, but I have no doubts about the vagaries of the Electoral College and the possibility of it once again delivering a surprise. We'll see what happens. Let's get one more caller in before the news headlines. Sam in East Ham, who are you backing?
I'm backing Joe Biden. And also, I just want to say congratulations on getting your own show. I think it's amazing. I think your little excerpts about American politics have been so helpful. And you're
That's
giving
very
me,
nice
like,
you, Sam.
David Meller and Ken Livingston vibes. We need to get you back on a full-time Saturday morning killer.
Careful what you wish for, Sam. Careful what you wish for.
My father is American, and he is so on edge of the prospect of Trump getting in. I really think that Biden getting in would be really good. And I've always been reluctant to say that America, it just really bugs me that my American family think that America rules the world. But I really, and I've always been reluctant to give them that win. But I really think that if Trump gets in, it will embolden Boris Johnson and British politics to continue down this bombastic route. I think we need Biden and normality. And I just think that it will hold us to some accountability because obviously we've just been emboldened by what we see Trump doing. Whatever Trump does, we see Boris doing later on. And I just really think Biden could be that voice of normality coming back into politics. I really hope, as a person of colour, that we don't have Trump coming back in. I really worry that when I saw in the lockdown that George Floyd's family spoke to the United Nations about what was going on, the fact that the free world was being condemned by the United Nations, I mean, it just blew my mind. I really just hope we never see those scenes ever again. Biden 2020, please God. Biden 2020.
All right, Sam. Well, stay tuned. I think it's certainly going to be very interesting to see how a President Biden establishes a relationship with a Prime Minister Boris Johnson. I mean, clearly the nature of the relationship that Boris Johnson enjoys with Donald Trump has been very warm, despite the fact that Boris Johnson, before the 2016 election, had withering criticisms of Donald Trump publicly to offer. But let's see if Joe Biden does indeed become president, how the two of them forge a new relationship. If you have just tuned in, you're listening to Simon Marks live from Washington on LBC, and we're covering two stories essentially in this hour, both the American election, obviously, but also all of those new restrictions and the new lockdown that Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced this evening. And we'll get back to our Westminster correspondent, Ben Kentish, shortly. But right now, it is 5:30 here in Washington, 9:30 in the UK, and it's time for the latest news with Zora Suleiman.
People in England will be under lockdown restrictions from Thursday. The measures won't be lifted until December the 2nd. The Prime Minister says if urgent action isn't taken now, hospitals will be overwhelmed with patients from coronavirus. And Boris Johnson also warned it won't just be in places where cases of coronavirus are high.
I've seen even in the southwest where incidence was so low and still is so low. It's now clear, though, that the current projections mean that hospitals in the southwest will run out of capacity in just a matter of weeks, unless we act.
Well, the lockdown means pubs, restaurants, non-essential shops, gyms and hairdressers will be closed for 4 weeks, but schools, colleges, universities, construction sites, factories and courts will remain open. Parliament will get a vote on the proposals, which are likely to get the backing of the leader of the opposition, Labour's Keir Starmer. Well, Keir has welcomed the announcement of a national lockdown for England, but tonight he said the Prime Minister should have taken action sooner. LBC weather, well, showers and gales across Scotland eventually easing. Clear for many areas for a while, followed by further rain and strong to gale force winds spreading east to all parts of the UK by morning. A low of 6 degrees.
The fight against coronavirus. For the very latest, stay with LBC. Simon Marks on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Live from Washington, it's a one-off hour-long special. We were going to spend the entire hour focused on the American presidential election, which of course is winding up here, but then Boris Johnson decided to upend things, not just for me, but for everybody living in England, with the announcement of that new national lockdown. And we're going to return briefly now to my colleague Ben Kentish, who is also here with me in Washington, supposed to be covering the American election, but he's been burning up the telephones back to London in a bid to stay across these latest developments at Westminster. Ben, you were talking earlier about the political reaction to all of this, but from a public perspective, I mean, everybody was just getting used to these tier one, tier two, tier three guidelines, and suddenly along comes a national lockdown, which is also going to entail massive consequences for businesses, for the economy, particularly small business owners. I mean, what is the sense of how the government is going to mitigate all of that going forwards?
That's the million-dollar question, Simon. And it is difficult because for weeks now, Boris Johnson has been saying in public that he does not believe a national lockdown is the right approach. He criticised Sir Keir Starmer at PMQs just 2 weeks ago for calling for one. And yet now, of course, the government has pivoted to that policy. So it is a difficult decision for the government. Ministers say that the situation evolved, that they tried a localised approach that they hoped would offset the rising cases while also doing more to protect the economy, and that it was right to try that before pivoting to a national approach. But the fear amongst many Conservative MPs in particular is that the Prime Minister, the government, will have been seen to again have acted too late, that the British public will say, if it was obvious this is what was coming down the line, why didn't we do it earlier and for shorter? Because scientists in the last month, Simon, have been very, very clear, people like Chris Whitty, Patrick Vallance, at those briefings, that they wanted more action. And of course, the Prime Minister has to take that into account and also weigh it up against the economic consequences. But the opposition, Keir Starmer, already having leapt on this, saying this is another sign of incompetence, the government has been too slow. And there are real fears in Number 10 that while they were given the benefit of the doubt first time around, when the virus was very new, the public complied largely with the lockdown, that things might be a bit different this time. And that is the prospect that is getting Conservative MPs so worked up at the moment.
Extraordinary developments, Ben. You and I will chat about them no doubt later. I'm going to see you in a couple of hours' time. Thanks very much indeed for that. And of course, Ben Kentish, LBC's Westminster correspondent, a central player in LBC's US election coverage. He's over here helping me out in Washington, D.C. over the course of the next few days. Let's continue our conversation about the US election. Brian in Edinburgh is on the line. He's called 0345 6060 973. And Brian, I gather you would vote for Donald Trump. Why would you do that?
Absolutely. Good evening, Simon. I hope you're keeping well.
Very well,
Simon,
indeed.
Yeah, I mean, look, just firstly, it's been fascinating listening and watching the coverage in the lead up to this election over the past few weeks, particularly from yourself and CNN, who seem to be really vying for Trump's blood here. Now, but just hear me out here. Two reasons why I'd vote for Trump. I think, first of all, Trump is commercially far more astute than Biden, which in turn leads me to think that he has a better ability to revive the economy more quickly or more quicker than Biden. I think secondly, and by the way, just on that point as well, by reviving the economy, that's obviously going to have a positive impact on the general health and well-being of the American people. Secondly, Simon, I just don't trust Biden's capacity to lead in such a massive position. I guess what I'm trying to say, the long and short of it, is, you know, you've seen with the gaffes over the course of the past few weeks, the desperation in Biden, you know, bringing Obama to, you know, these speeches across America just shows how desperate he really is. But I really question his mental capacity.
I'm not sure that's fair, Brian. I'm not sure it shows how desperate he is. I mean, you know, if Donald Trump was able to bring George W. Bush to a rally to campaign for him, I'm sure he would do it. I mean, the difficulty that Donald Trump has got is that... Go ahead.
He's a one-man army, Simon. He's a one-man army, Trump. Trump would never do that. And probably due to the fact, largely down to pride, but more so for the fact that he probably feels that he doesn't need to. Look, Simon, the long and short of it is I think that the American people need another 4 years of Trump.
Okay.
Like I said, commercially, far more astute than Biden.
Okay, Brian, stay on the line because we've got another caller, Kieran in Brixton, who's going to join us now, and he would vote for Joe Biden. Kieran, why would you vote for Joe Biden?
Hi, Simon. Thanks very much for bringing me in. I think Brian's got it totally the wrong way around here. What we've seen in Joe Biden is somebody who was vice president of the United States 8 years ago, who, when they took over in 2008, shepherded the Recovery Act through the United States Congress and oversaw that. And that was a previous to coronavirus, a historic decline in the United States economy, and he really turned that around. And also, Brian says, you know, if Trump is able to improve the economy, then somehow that will help the health and well-being of the people. But if you don't take coronavirus seriously, then there is no economy. And Trump's shown time and time again that he obviously has no regard for the coronavirus mm-hmm. or the lives of his own supporters, never mind the lives of the American public.
Brian, there is a point there, isn't there? I mean, Joe Biden's essential presentation on the election campaign trail is you cannot divorce the health of the economy from the need to deal with COVID-19. And Donald Trump's approach is you can divorce the possibility of reviving the economy from the ongoing impact of COVID-19. Are you not affected by that in your decision making?
My decision-making process, you know, remains firm. And look, I agree with I understand and appreciate your other caller's points. But let's look at it in real time. Look at the economy over the course of this current quarter, up just a tad over 33%, and we're in the midst of a pandemic. So that leads me to think that if Trump wins the election, he's going to revive the economy a lot quicker than Joe Biden. And look, nobody's not taking COVID seriously. It is arguably the most important factor in this presidential election, and it goes hand in hand with the economy, in my opinion. Okay. So look, make no mistake about it. I think come next week, I think we're going to see another 4 years.
Okay, Kieran, what do you say to the argument that Donald Trump built a strong economy once, he's uniquely positioned to do it again?
Donald Trump benefited from 8 years of a Democratic president and the biggest turnaround in the U.S. economy since the Great Depression. He was riding high on the coattails of that. There was a big bubble, and then something like the pandemic comes along, the bubble bursts, and we've seen a record low. The economy has improved 31-point-whatever percent, which is obviously an incredible short-term recovery.
It is under Trump's watch.
But that's because you've gone from the rock bottom of rock bottoms and opened shops again. And obviously the economy is going to rebound in a fantastic way. But what you're not taking into account is how unsustainable that is. Can I just quickly mention another point as well that Brian brought up separate to the economy, which was a doubting of Biden's mental acuity to be president of the United States, which I just find baffling given the fact that... What's that, sorry?
He referred to Trump twice as George, i.e. as in George, George Bush.
What I say to you about that is
he looked Trump
referring to head of the Apple company as Tim Apple.
He was able to explain that.
He could speak Japanese when his earpiece wasn't working to the Japanese Prime Minister. The guy is a joke. Everybody in the world stage thinks he's a joke. The guy can't string a sentence together. He makes a fool of himself every time he opens his mouth. He's got no regard for anybody around him. He says the most ridiculous things. He's famous for it. You Google the word idiot, and a picture of Donald Trump appears on Google.
He'd probably argue that was because the social media giants are mitigating the search terms against him. Listen, Brian in Edinburgh, Kieran in Brixton, thank you both very much indeed. That is exactly, by the way, the kind of conversation that has been taking place across American dinner tables over the course of the last 6 months. Very interesting to hear two different perspectives on this election. I want to get to a couple of texts and tweets. First of all, one of my regular correspondents on Twitter, Colin says, can you do a section on the Senate election too, please? And while we probably don't have time to dwell on that tonight, I do think it is very important for everybody to understand this is not just a presidential election. One third of the Senate and the entire House of Representatives is also on the ballot. And if the Democrats win not just the White House, but win a majority in the U.S. Senate and expand their majority in the House of Representatives, then it is truly going to be a new day here in the United States. Jennifer has sent a tweet saying, a friend living in America has said there is much suppression of voters in the southern states. Great to have your comments on this. I mean, again, we could do a full hour on that and the efforts that both political parties, the Republicans and Democrats, go to maximize their ability to deliver votes. But there is absolutely no question that when you see in places like Alabama and parts of rural Georgia, people queuing up, and they're mostly African Americans, standing in queues for 10, 11, 12 hours to vote, it's not because of the size of the crowds, it's because of the lack of voting facilities that have been laid on by Republican authorities in some of those areas. So there's no question that that could be a factor when we get to election night as well. Much more from me to come. 0345 6060 973 is the number. You can text 84850, tweet at LBC. You're listening to Simon Marks live from Washington on LBC. The time is 9:46.
Coming up at 10, Nick Abbott, leading Britain's conversation. Next on LBC. Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with Simon Marks.
And we're live from Washington at 5:49 here in Washington, D.C., 9:49 in the U.K. We've had a text in from Tim who says, Simon, you must have enjoyed the drama of reporting on Trump over the last 4 years. If Biden wins, won't life be less fun for you? Well, I think there's several ways of answering that question, Tim, but partly that depends on where Donald Trump goes, because I'm not necessarily convinced that we are going to witness the departure of Donald Trump from the scene, even if he loses this election. I suspect he's going to remain a pretty ever-present factor in all of our lives over here. I have enjoyed the drama of reporting on this over the last 4 years. It's been a great pleasure and a privilege to do this for LBC every single day. Next caller who has called 0345 6060973 is Mary, and I'm very happy to say she is calling in from my old neighbourhood in Cricklewood.
Oh,
Mary.
My.
Yes, exactly. You've voted already, I gather. You've got a vote in the U.S.?
Well, yes, I'm a dual national now, but I'm an American, and I've been here 40 years, and I just want to say how much I've appreciated your broadcasts over the last week.
Oh, thank you, Mary.
It's been fantastic. But yes, I'm a former employee of the Republican National Committee. Before I came here, I was what you probably would call a political hack. I worked as a paid staffer in several campaigns, local, state, Reagan. And I've served as chairman, co-chair of Fairfax County Young Republicans, which you would probably know. Mm-hmm. I was elected to the convention as a vet delegate in Virginia. So I was a really strong Republican, and I've voted for Biden.
Aha. Uh-huh. And why have you made the change?
Well, I actually voted for Obama last time around.
Okay.
Because I wasn't happy about the Kent McCain's running mate. But I voted this time because I just think Trump is a national disgrace. I think he's trampled all over the rules. I think he doesn't have respect for anybody. He's so non-presidential. And I work in education, and, you know, whatever party, as Americans, we grew up thinking children are told, you know, the president's a good role model and you too can grow up to be president. And I just think he's an awful example.
Mary, can I ask you, as someone who has played a role in Republican politics, and, you know, we've obviously spent time here over the last few months watching the rise of the Lincoln Project,
yes,
disaffected Republicans. The Lincoln Project secured $39 million in contributions from other disaffected Republicans in the third quarter of this year. It's been a real factor in this election. What happens after this election if Donald Trump loses and Joe Biden becomes president? Is there not an existential threat to the Republican Party as we know it, given the huge gulf that exists between Donald Trump supporters on the one hand and disaffected Republicans like yourself on the other?
Well, it's very true. And by the way, I tried desperately to donate to the Good Lincoln Project, but they didn't have a mechanism for overseas people to do it, and I didn't have a U.S. zip code to enter into the website. So they made all that money without my contribution. But I think talking to people that I'm still in touch with who were, you know, there's also, what is it, the 43 alumni, Alumni 43, another group of ex-Bush staffers and appointees and all that. There are so many of these groups, and I think that whether the Republican Party has to really reshape itself, whether it splinters, something's got to happen, because I think that especially if enough of a swing vote of Republicans helped to Biden to get into the White House, the Republicans have to face up to this. But I know there are a lot of disaffected ones. And I'm really pleased also that the Lincoln Project, as I understand it, have been going after what they call the enablers. So the congressional and Senate candidates who've been facilitating Trump's behavior. I think that's really quite bold. And what will happen afterwards? Who knows? I think there's going to need to be a real recalibrating of the whole GOP. It's certainly not the party of Lincoln anymore.
Right. Okay. Mary, thank you so much for the call. Give my love to Cricklewood. I hope to wander its streets again before long. Let me get you to a couple of other texts that we've had. Jeff in Wembley says, I'm sure something remarkable is going on. Do we really think that the people who are queuing for hours in phenomenal numbers are queuing to cast their vote for Trump? It will be a Biden landslide, says Jeff. Cat texts, I am so anxious about the US election. If I was able to vote, I'd have to vote Biden because I find Trump a vile little man with an oversized and dangerous ego. That's Kat texting in. Let's find out what Ron has to say. He's calling us from Camden.
Floating voter, but very much enjoying all your informative people on the show. Great show.
Thank you, Ron. Are you saying you're undecided?
Yeah, I am, because, you know, the ages of them and, you know, all the disadvantages on both sides. I'm glad I'm not an American citizen. I'm floating still at this stage.
Can anything happen between now and Tuesday? Let's say you were an American citizen and an American voter. Could anything happen between now and Tuesday morning to drag you across one line or the other?
No, I don't think so. I'm just stuck, really stuck. I just want good leadership, and I don't know whether we've got it.
I was talking to someone this week who was saying that there are no undecided voters out there. There are voters that have decided that they can simply support neither man, and you may well be one of them. Ron, thank you very much for that. I'm going to run because I also want to get to Michael in Bromley before we have to wrap this up. Michael, who would you back in this race?
I'd back Biden. I'm no lover of him, but I'd back Biden to get Trump out. I would. I don't think Biden's going to win, though, Simon.
You don't? You'd back him, but you think he's going to lose?
Yeah, there's a big group there which is hasn't really been focused on, and that's the left wing, the Socialist Party, the Democratic Party. And they were very much screwed by the Democratic establishment due to the Bernie malarkey and all that with Bloomberg and the West. And a lot of them aren't happy. They're not, and they're still not happy, to be honest, Simon. And I believe that large group, mainly under 30s, will not really turn out as much as they did in 2016. And I believe that, combined with voter suppression, will keep Trump in the White House. And I believe you've already focused on that a lot, Simon. But the voter turnout for the youth, for the under 30s, which is a left-wing and a socialist part of the Democratic Party, will be a big factor. And it's a big factor for here and Labour. It is, Simon.
Yes, of course.
So I believe
that
this could come to fruition, because Labour knows that they need a left-wing vote or they're not going to win in 4 years' time. And
very interesting.
That's not really, it's the same type of the Democratic Party, but it's not been as visible. And I follow the Bernie Bros and the left-wing a lot, and they are very anti-Biden. They are. So if they don't turn out, Simon, I believe that is going to be an area which maybe Joe Biden and the Democratic establishment have really taken for granted.
Interesting. Michael, thank you. Thank you.
Possible?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think certainly the spectre of the left hanging over Joe Biden's shoulder, you know, rumors here over the last 10 days or so that Bernie Sanders is being viewed as a possible Labour secretary in a Biden administration. I think that may end up being a factor. Look, if Joe Biden loses this election, there's going to be a massive inquiry into what went wrong. If he wins, all of that is going to be forgotten. But thank you very much for the call. Thanks to all of you for your calls. I didn't want to end the programme tonight without a moment remembering the great Sean Connery.
A number of decades ago, when I started in this business, I was told by someone who seemed to know what he was talking about that I should take lessons to erase permanently my accent so that I could play parts without wearing a kilt. And so that the American audiences could understand what the hell I was saying. Well, it's quite obvious by now that I didn't take his advice.
He told a story of going to an American cinema once to watch one of his own films many years ago. And when he got up to leave and the lights came up, a woman in one of the rows behind him shouted, "My God, it's Sion Connery." Sir Sion, of course, who died today at the age of 90. That's where I've got to leave things tonight. Thanks for all your calls, texts and tweets. Stay with LBC for full coverage of the election and, of course, our election night special helmed by Ian and Sheila. It starts at 10 o'clock on Tuesday night. Coming up at 1 on LBC, it's Clive Ball taking you through the night. But now you're well and truly warmed up. I'll convey you from the ridiculousness of America to the sublime Nick Abbott.
Simon, what a pleasure. Thank you. I think we're just days away from the United States becoming programming on the History Channel for future generations to shake their head at in wonderment at how a whole country went along with it.